across the top of the world. That there was a letter of approval from Immigration and the Ministry of Child and Family Services. There was nearly a year of relentlessly pounding paperwork, and a million brave people in agencies and departments who locked arms to make a bridge from us to her. Because none of that is the long and short of it, really. Love got her here. Love got all of us here. And yeah, you bet. Folks can yell across aisles and Facebook streams at the other and the different, and the loudly opinionated with an opinion far different from ours. But somewhere along the line, we are all the same kind of different with the same kind of story. Love made us all, and love is what got us all here. Which is another way of saying, sacrifice got us all here. Someone sacrificed something and someone to get us all here in this country. Someone loved something more than themselves and sacrificed safety and ease and comfort and climbing higher up some flimsy ladder so you could get to live in this country. Someone sacrificed shavings off their own heart to get you into this relationship, this marriage, this community, this place right now. And I hold our broken and brave baby right there at my shoulder, her hands clutching strands of my hair, burying her head deeper into my neck. And I look around at a room full of interns and doctors and surgeons and nurses with names like Shiravati and Mirakor and Dipchand. And we are a nation of sacrificers. A nation of givers and gifters and sacrificers and reachers. People who give when it costs and step up to lay it all down and choose to take less to give more. People who know the foundation of anything worth anything is always sacrifice. Because the real truth tellers and freedom dwellers believe that when things are crumbling, when foundations are giving away, when relationships and hopes and dreams in countries and our world feel like it's falling apart, there is only one shape the pieces of our brokenness can take to know wholeness, and that is the shape of the cross. If your healing doesn't look like a sacrificial cross, it isn't healing, and it won't heal your soul. If your country, your relationships, your choices don't look like a sacrificial cross, you'll end up dying in a thousand ways that never even crossed your mind. You fit into the abundant life, the life you ultimately want, when you live shaped like a cross, cruciform, sacrificing. And you can say all you want about love and sacrifice and choosing a truth-telling life. But your truth about love, it isn't the whole truth if it doesn't look like the sacrifice of the cross. The only form real happiness can ever take is cruciform. The only way to break free into the abundant life is to live broken and given. Because life's not about choosing a lifestyle, but a way to serve. In the middle of the night, she cries for me from her crib. And from her bed, I reach for her, and our hands meet, and she laces her fingers tight through mine. And that's all she needs. What dark places and hard times need us all to do is to reach out and hold on. She pulls my hand up to her face and cups my face in her hands. She lies there cupping my face between her hands, slow sleep breaths warming my face. I kiss her forehead the gentlest. Love got us all here. Sacrifice got us all here. You have got to sacrifice something for someone, or you will have nothing and no one. Because without sacrifice, we have nothing. And there are seven things a country, a relationship, a life cannot have. Power without principle. Money without work. Work without meaning. Comfort without conscience. Leadership without character. Love without sacrifice. Abundance without Christ. It's not necessary to feel great for a country or a relationship or a life to be great. It's only necessary to greatly sacrifice. The doctor ends up saying her broken heart needs surgery soon, that she needs deep healing. And I nod. Healing. There's a way for all of us, a way through brokenness. I listen to it in the dark, her heart, one brave, sacrificial beat after another, steady and sure of the healing coming. For reflection, how have you been mentored by the people in your life who've lived broken and given and sacrificed so that you are where you are? What do you need to sacrifice? Or how do you need to live sacrificially to more fully experience the true way of abundance? Devotion 9, Living Cruciform. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. Isaiah 42:3. There's this black pen lying on the table across from me. I pick up the pen and turn my wrist over. How many years had I cut that paling wrist, wearing my brokenness on the outside? I pick up the pen and on a whim, on a conviction, kind of ridiculously desperate to remember the radical symbolism, to remember the union, the communion, I write it on my wrist. Let it bleed like a vow right there into the thin white skin. One little black cross. I am busted and his. And he is broken and given and mine. I trace that one black cross. Can you dare to break yourself into a kind of communion? A kind of union? Can you let the way be made for broken places to remember? This is one wild dare to live cruciform, to let life become shaped like a cross. This could be a dare to let life be shaped like union. It's a dare to be married to mysteries, so Christ has hands again in this world, and specifically mine. This cross is a sign of my believing that I am called into the koinonia of his son, Jesus Christ. I know this. The Eucharisteo precedes the miracle, and the miracle is always, always koinonia. But maybe I haven't been living it long enough yet. I wash my paling face at the bathroom mirror. The woman in the mirror is a wide-eyed deer caught in the headlights, life running her down. And she's desperate to know, how can you believe there's enough in you of any value? How do you believe there is enough of you to live given and be wanted? The weed in the fields needed this rain that's sheeting down like some upstairs plumbing let loose. The sky slides down the window pane next to the bathroom mirror, like something a bit busted. I need these questions, need answers to fall, to grow something in me strong enough to withstand this broken life. If I want to truly give it forward today, if I want to be the gift, don't I have to believe there's enough in me that's a gift to give forward? Maybe we believe in Jesus. We just don't always believe in him working in us. The cold tap water feels good, splashed on my face, running down my neck. It feels strange, even wrong, to believe he could find any value in my tarnished brokenness. But didn't he? Somehow? Didn't he believe it was worth redeeming, renewing, resurrecting, to make all into more than enough, in spite of my brokenness and through it? That cross on the wrist, wasn't it a sign of Jesus believing? Isn't the cross a sign of Christ believing in us, believing that the busted are to be believed in? Which feels unbelievable. The slowing rain seems like a bestowing, belief growing. Lotion massaged slowly into dry, chapped palms, rubbed into the broken creases across the backs of my hands. There was what an Orthodox Hasidic rabbi had said on a flight westward. He'd put his prayer shawl in the overhead compartment and sat down, sweeping aside the tassels dangling from his pockets. And somewhere over the mountains, the light thick above the clouds, the rabbi turned to me, mid-conversation. "Why do you people always say it's about having a strong belief in God? Who sits with the knowing that God's belief in you is even stronger than yours in him?" I'd put down my styrofoam cup of black coffee and tried to read the rabbi's face. He'd leaned forward in his seat and tilted his head so he could look at me directly. "You may believe in God, but never forget, it's God who believes in you." He looked out the window and pointed. "Every morning that the sun rises and you get to rise, that's God saying he believes in you, that he believes in the story he's writing through you. He believes in you as a gift the world needs." Was I living my life like I fully believed that? Because if Christ is in you, can God ever stop believing in you? Because doesn't he always believe in Christ in you? Believe in the redemptive story Christ is writing through you. Believe in Christ working to make all things in you into a gift back to the world. God's mercies are new every morning, not as an obligation to you, but as an affirmation of you. At the rabbi's words, I nodded slowly and instinctively reached my thumbs over, tracing the faint cross rubbed into my left wrist. Christ is in me, so God can't help but believe in me, because Christ is in me. An abundant communion. For reflection, how would it change your life, your days, your heart, if you believe that because Jesus is in you and your brokenness, God believes in you because he is working through you and your brokenness? Reflecting on Jesus, who offers new mercies to you, not as an obligation to you, but as an affirmation of you. What does abundant communion with Jesus look like today? Devotion 10, Held Brokenness. He remembers his covenant forever, the promise he made for 1,000 generations. Psalms 105, verse 8. It's not when that package finally decides to show up in the mail, dragged in through a foot of lingering snow. It's not when I happen to turn around to the sink and remember that pan broiling in the oven before it burns to a sacrificial crisp. It's not when, for a blink in the choreographed cosmos, the stars all align, and I can see the bottom of all the laundry baskets. That's not when it's the best. I mean, honestly, who really knows when it's the best? What feels like a great failure on earth may be revealed as a great success in heaven. This changes everything for me in the hard days. We can't really keep going around saying, you know, everything is what it is. Because how do we know how things really are and how things are going to turn out to be? But I will just go ahead and say, the moment in the early morning dark when our littlest girl reaches, when she holds on to me, when her fingers stretch to find mine, when she finds and clenches tight, when I hear her breathing fall again into the rhythms of home and hear and sleep, that is the moment I best remember, try to memorize, to always remember. That's the moment that remembers me. When life breaks our hearts, goes ahead and breaks parts and members of us, there are moments that can remember us, that can put the parts and members of bits of our heart back together again. Her holding on to me remembers me. Her holding on to me makes Christ intimately present to me. The dark feels lighter, us holding on to each other, her fingers tied gently around mine, like the relief of peace. Maybe there is always just holding on through the dark. A mother looked me in the eye this week and told me her son hung himself, and she was holding on to that cross on her wrist, to living cruciform, to following him who is the way, to finding the broken way through. We fell into each other, gripped each other's backs. Hope is faith, holding on a moment longer. There are women who can't remember the last time they were held, the last time they were pulled in close to another beating heart so they didn't feel alone. There are women who can never remember being cupped the gentlest, their faces traced and outlined by a fingertip of love, who can't remember letting someone look long into their eyes without shame, who can't remember not looking away. There are hands that forget what it feels like to simply be held, forget what it feels like to be connected deeply to just one other human being on this spinning planet. There are parents reaching for kids who are reaching for something else, reaching away. Dads reaching for kids who don't want to look back. Kids reaching for dads who have never really looked long their way. Siblings who can't find each other anymore and maybe don't even care. Women reaching for lifelines and only finding deadlines and end of the lines. It can be hard to hold on when you don't feel held. The great challenge of faith is holding on to hope after you've lost your naivety. A heartbroken woman announces this week that her young husband and father of two died, ravaged with cancer. And she just shot straight with us. Not once did she reach out to any churches, coffee bars, trendy lounges, and hipster ambiance to help her hold on. When it's hard to hold on, no one holds on to what is cool. They hold on to Christ. When it's hard to hold on, no one holds on to what is hipster. They hold on to him who is holy and healing. When it's hard to hold on, we don't hold on to trendy. We hold on to the true vine. We don't hold on to the prevailing and popular, because we need to hold on to the Prince of Peace and the true perfecter of our faith. It's the beliefs we hold that hold on to us, even when we're struggling to hold on. And we can always keep holding on, because our God can always be counted on. The art of living lies in the balance of holding on and letting go, because he's holding on to you. He's holding on to everything. The art of living is about holding on to his promises and surrendering to his plan. Hold on to his promises. Let go into his plan. There are marriages holding on only by one fragile, fraying thread, and women holding on to thin hope by the skin of their teeth, and adoptive parents holding on by their whitened knuckles to just one more day, and parents of prodigals holding on when everything's telling them to hightail it off this insane ride. And there she is, toddling over to me at the end of the day, when I'm standing there by the sink, with its basin of tepid water, washing the last of the pots, and she looks up at me, both arms raised. Mama, 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 please, mama, up. I hold you. I lean over. You want to hold me, baby girl? She nods, grins, and her Cheshire cat spreading smile way that melts me. She actually wants me to pick her up, wants me to hold her. But the only words she knows for the holding that she wants are the words she's heard me say 1,000 times. Come, I hold you. Yes, Mama, please, up, I hold you. And I scoop her up. And the universe seems to jolt to a holy still. Pause. And all us hangers on, all us holding on, we exhale. Yes, child, you can hold me. Because I'm holding you. Yes, child, you can keep holding on to me, because I am is always holding on to you. And when she flings her arms around my neck, presses her love right into my cheek, I can feel it, the remembering, parts of my broken heart remembering. All of us, the children, can keep holding on, because we are the ones always held. For reflection, how have you experienced the abundant embrace of God holding you through brokenness? Is what you are holding on to in your life and priorities causing more brokenness or abundance? Part 2. How do we live like the broken-hearted cruciform Christ? Devotion 11. Risky living. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." 2 Corinthians 12:9. When my dad called this morning, he said his farming friend, Alan Bertrand, was just trying to figure out whether to spend the years he's got left restoring another one of those antique tractors he has out in the shop, or if he should spend the time he's got left trying to track down a daughter he hasn't seen or heard from in 10 years. I could see Dad in my mind in his suspender overalls. And so Alan decided, well, the tractor. He already knew how to fix the tractor. Little risk. But the daughter? He doesn't even know where she is. That was all risk. But Dad, I wanted to say, love is a risk that's never a risk. Look, Dad continued, do we give up what makes us really happy? Whatever we're good at, a lifetime of happiness, to risk our lives in a relationship that might never make us happy? There are no guarantees with people. And before I could think, the words left my mouth. Jesus said, whoever loses their life for me will find it. Jesus risked himself on me. How can I not risk my life on you? You may not love me back. You may humble me, humiliate me, reject me, shatter my heart, and drive the shards into my soul. But this is not the part that matters. What matters is that in the act of loving, we become more like the givenness of love himself. What matters most is not if our love makes other people change, but that in loving, we change. What matters is that in the sacrificing to love someone, we become more like someone. Regardless of anything or anyone else changing, the success of loving is in how we change because we kept on loving. Who knew that sometimes if you don't risk anything, you're actually risking everything? Love is always worth the risk because the reward of loving is in the joy of loving itself. Love is a risk that's never a risk. Loving itself is the greatest outcome because loving makes one more beautiful, more like broken-hearted beauty himself. And no matter what the outcome looks like, if your love has poured out, your life will be successful. Relationships are the realest reality, and the realest risk, and the worthiest risk. Because in sacrificing ourselves, we are guaranteed to discover the depths of our best and realest selves. Whatever you love is what you really are. Tractor or daughter. The saddest thing of all may be when we give away our lives to insignificant things. Why love the wrong things and the wrong ways? The only way to the abundant life is to love the right things in the right ways. Could I turn to my people, any and all people, and live it? I am what I love, and I will love you like Jesus because of Jesus through the strength of Jesus. I will love when I am not loved back. I will love when I am hurt and disappointed and betrayed and inconvenienced and rejected. I simply will love. No expectations, no conditions, no demands. Nothing will stop me from loving, not time, distance, disappointment, or death. Nothing will stop me from the risk of vulnerably loving, because love like this is not a risk. Love defies logic and keeps on loving when it makes no sense, because that is what love does. And I will fall in love and fail at love and fall in my love, but I will never stop the practicing, the givenness and the receiving. For what is faith? What is love if it is not practiced? Giving away the heart heals the heart. For reflection, what are the priorities of your broken heart? As you prioritize what you love the most, how are these priorities a reflection of who you really are? How is your life proving that relationships are the realest reality? And the realest risk, and the worthiest risk. Devotion 12, Abundant Courage. For you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. Galatians 5:13. That cross I'd pinned onto my wrist the day before, it's about rubbed off. I've got no bloody idea at all how to take this dare. How can all the bad brokenness be broken with good brokenness? How do you live cruciform and be broken and given into a kind of communion? There's a mama around the corner from the farm. They say she's been up for days and rocking that brand new daughter of hers, who the doctors conceded last week as a fatal disease. What in God's good name was the clock on her wall saying? I'd sat up late the night before to write back to my friend Elizabeth. We had met nearly 6 years ago, two mothers with nearly a dozen kids between the two of us, commiserating over houses that seemed to manufacture chaos like it was our actual business plan. I told her I was trying to remember to put my priorities on all things unseen. Told her I was trying to slay the idol of the scene, break the idols of performance, and believe the state of my house does not reflect the state of my soul. And she'd confirmed, it's the priorities unseen, the prayers, the relationships, the love while doing the work that hold the meaning, the merit. And she'd leaned in and asked if we could be friends for life. And I had said, deal, and laughed way too loud. I couldn't have known then that Elizabeth would turn out to be unlike any other friend I'd ever had. Who else sends courage in a box and pounds of milk chocolate that would show up at the door? Who else would reach out late at night and say, I see you, the you behind everything you're doing, and I like you, the you that just is? Who else lived out priorities unseen, priorities that let the people around her, me, be known? I couldn't have known then that Elizabeth would be the friend for life that my life needed in ways I hadn't expected. Then last night, Elizabeth said hospice had just started coming to the house. How do you end up being 40-something with hospice knocking on your front door? How can God let the world break a bit like this? How is this all grace? How is this love? I bury my head deeper into the pillow, rub a bit of that smudged cross on my wrist, and yet it is love. Who knows why God allows heartbreak? But the answer must be important enough because God allows his heart to break too. I reach for the pen on my nightstand, the way I've reached for ink to count 1,000 ways he loves me, the way ink's been the cheapest of medicines. But now, can the ink be lived, branded onto the skin? How could it leave the page and lead away through pain? The ink would start right there on my scarred wrist, right where part of me wanted to kind of die, and not in the saving way. And somehow there is good brokenness that grows out of every scar and wound we will ever suffer. Draw one line vertically down my wrist, right over scars. The question of evil and suffering is answered in the breaking of God's own heart, too. Draw another line horizontally across my wrist, breaking scar lines with cross lines. Our broken hearts always break his. It's the quantum physics of God. Your one broken heart always splits God's heart in two. You never cry alone. And still, your brokenness can feel like a tomb you can't quite claw yourself out of. Is the most painful kind of tears the kind no one can see? The kind where your soul weeps alone? You can feel the corners and edges of you withering with the weight of scar tissue on your own soul. Flannel sheets feel like grave clothes. How long can I refuse to move? Exhale. Maybe air isn't all that keeps you alive. There's a cross that's helping me breathe. It's reminding me, reforming me. And I'm so insufferably forgetful. I try to remember that grace wallowed with courage is elemental to living. Inked cross bleeding into my arms. Swallow down his grace. What he gives is enough, abundantly enough courage to move up out of bed. One small step for a woman, when giant, abundant leap for sanity. The woman with broken kids. The friend with dying friends. The ache of a broken heart. Just take the first step and then the next step. Courage is always reaching out and taking just a bit of that iron nail grace. For reflection, you may not know why God allows heartbreak, but the answer must be important because God allows his heart to break too. How does this change your perspective on your own brokenness? How are you experiencing the cruciform grace of Jesus as more than abundantly enough for your brokenness right now? Devotion 13, Mastering the Dark. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. John 1:5. The old coot ran in his boots. Weren't too many of anybody who believed he could. The kids and I read about the old guy one night after supper, and the dishwasher's moaning away, crumbs still across the counter. Oh, there's this old guy who ran 544 miles. His name was Cliff Young, and he wasn't really so young. He was 61 years old. He was a farmer. Levi grinned big. Mr. Young showed up for the race in his Oshkosh overalls and with his work boots on, galoshes over top, just in case it rained. He had no Nike sponsorship. He had no wife. Hadn't had one ever. Lived with his mother. Never drank. Never ran in any kind of race before. Never ran a marathon, or a half marathon, or even a 5-mile race. But here he was, standing in his work boots at the starting line of an ultra-marathon, the most grueling race in the world. 544 miles. Try wrapping your head around pounding the concrete with one foot after another for 544 endless stretching miles. They don't measure races like that in yards, but in zip codes. First thing Cliff did was take out his teeth. Said his false teeth rattled when he ran. Said he grew up on a farm with sheep and no four-wheelers, no horses, so the only way to round up sheep was on the run. Sometimes the best training for the really big things is just the everyday things. That's what Cliff said. Whenever the storms would roll in, I'd have to go run and round up the sheep. 2,000 head of sheep. 2,000 acres of land. Sometimes I'd have to run those sheep for 2 or 3 days. I can run this race. It's only 2 more days, 5 days. I've run sheep for 3. Got any backers? Reporters shoved their microphones around old Cliff like a spike belt. No. Cliff slipped his hands into his overall pockets. Well, then you can't run. Cliff looked down at his boots. Does a man need backers? Or does a man need to believe? What you believe is the biggest backer you'll ever have. The other runners, all under a buff 30 years of age, they take off like pumped shots from that starting line. And scruffy old Cliff staggers forward. He doesn't run. Shuffles, more like it. Straight back, arms dangling, feet awkwardly shuffling along. Cliff eats dust. For 18 hours, the racers blow down the road, far down the road, and old Cliff shuffles on behind. Come the pitch black of night, the runners in their $400 ergonomic Nikes and Adidas lie down by the roadside. Because that's the plan to win an ultramarathon, to run 544 straight miles. 18 hours of running, 6 hours of sleep, rise and repeat for 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. The dark falls in, runners sleep. Cameras get turned off, reporters go to bed. And through the black night, one 61-year-old man, far behind, keeps shuffling on. And all I can think is the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And the light shineth in the darkness, but the darkness comprehendeth it not. Catalambano, comprehend, understand, master. Cliff Young runs on through the night, and there is an abundant light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not master it. The darkness doesn't understand the light, doesn't comprehend the light, doesn't get the light, doesn't overcome the light, doesn't master the light. Darkness doesn't have anything on light, on hope, on faith. The darkness that sucks at the prodigal kid doesn't have anything on the light of his mother's prayers. The black of pornography that threatens at the edges doesn't master the blazing light of Jesus at the center. The pit of depression that plunges deep doesn't go deeper than the love of your Jesus, and there is no place his light won't go to find you, to save you, to hold you. That low-lying storm cloud that hangs over you can't master the light of Christ that raises you. Darkness can't drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Martin Luther King Jr. had said it, had lived it. Only words of light can drive out worlds of dark. Only lives of light can drive out lies of dark. Darkness can never travel as fast as light. No matter how bad things get, no matter how black the dark seeps in, no matter the depths of the night, the dark can never travel as fast as light. The light is always there first, waiting to shatter the dark. Cliff Young runs on through the dark because he didn't know you were supposed to stop. The accepted way professional runners approach the race was to run 18 hours, sleep 6 for 7 days straight, but Cliff Young didn't know the accepted way. He only knew what he did back home, the way he'd always done it. You run through the dark. Turns out when Cliff Young said he gathers sheep around his farm for 3 days, he meant he'd run across 2,000 acres of farmland for 3 days straight without stopping. You gathered sheep by running through the dark. So along the endless stretches of highway, Cliff gained ground because he ran through the dark. For 5 days, 15 hours and 4 minutes straight, Cliff Young ran, never once stopping for the dark, never stopping until the old sheep farmer crossed the finish line first, beating a world record by 2 days. The second place runner crossed the finish line almost 10 hours after old Cliff. And when they handed Mr. Young his $10,000 prize, he said he hadn't known there was a prize, said he'd run for the wonder of it, said that the other runners had worked hard too, so he waited at the finish line and handed each of the five who finished an equal share of the prize. And then the old coot in boots walked away without a penny for the race, but with the hearts of the world. While others run fast, you can just shuffle with perseverance. While others set out to impress, you can simply press on. While others stop for the dark, you can run through the dark. When those reporters asked him afterwards what kept him running through the nights, Cliff said, "I imagined I was outrunning a storm to gather up my sheep. I sit there in the thickening dark with the one who mastered the dark and overcame the storm to gather his sheep. And I remember that now there is one who is abundant light, who shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never overcome him. And you can see them out the front window, far away to the west, out there on the highway, the lights all breaking through the dark." For reflection, what brokenness and darkness is your marathon right now? How can you leave it with the light himself today. What would your life look like if you daily ran your race knowing that abundant light will never let the darkness overcome you? Devotion 14, Abundant Time. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. 1 Corinthians 13:7. I'd always thought of time as this highway robber that steals life until we ultimately die. But the perspective of Jesus all through the Gospels offers a radically different perspective. Jesus speaks of time as the highway by which we have come to die, so we can ultimately get to more abundant life. Time isn't something you seize, it's something you sacrifice. It's not something to grab, it's something to give. If Eucharisteo, giving thanks, slows down time, then can being broken and given in communion break time by actually multiplying it? Maybe time gets broken and multiplied and made into something more whenever someone breaks and gives herself or himself away. Death stops time for us here and makes us a seed to be buried in the ground. But maybe when we die to self, we break time here, and our sacrificial love breaks into eternity, going on forever. Love never dies. Isn't that exactly what Jesus did to break time's death grip on us? He died, and his death broke a hole in the wall of time, and incarnates how cruciform, abundant life is the new door for all of us to escape out of time. Maybe temporary time is made for dying to self, so your eternal self can really live. Have the hands of the clock stopped moving there in the kitchen? It takes courage to listen with your whole heart to the tick of God's timing, rather than march to the loudest beat of our fears. Time can't dictate dreams or hijack hope or determine destination. It can't force us into living anything but what we believe. No matter what the hands of the clock say, underneath us all are the everlasting arms, and time's arms are too weak to rob any hope, steal any prayers, destroy any joy, or crush any purpose. Time never heals wounds like God does. It's God's hands that control the universe. The hands of the clock are bound by the decisions of our hands, and he has made our hands free to be his. I pick up a jar of wheat off the windowsill, try to count grains, envision each of these kernels as days, the only time I have. It's a jarring thought. The way to break time's hold on me is to be broken and given with my time. There's a stray kernel on the counter, another left in the measuring cup. I pick up each gold nugget with the tip of my finger. You can't waste one. You can't afford not to break each grain day, die to self, and have twice as much life. Wasn't the cross on my wrist daring just that? The shape of multiplied time looks like a cross, cruciform, broken and given, reaching right out. There is enough time yet for picking glads in muggy August morning sunshine, and filling mason jar vases of blooms for sidelined, forgotten people. There's time for lingering over cups of coffee and listening to the pouring out of someone's cracked heart. Time for long phone calls and shared pie and going the extra mile. And there's time to be broken and given into all the world's brokenness because this is how to break time's hold. At the beginning of the year, I'd left the lid off the jar of wheat, watched Shalom run her hand again and again through the kernels. Maybe what matters isn't what we want from the time we have to live, but what time wants from us. For reflection, where is your use of time causing more brokenness than abundance? Where in your life might you die to self and live more sacrificially with your time so that you might abundantly multiply meaningful joy? Devotion 15, Abundant Bravery. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Isaiah 41:10. Dear fears, my grandmother used to say, when I started to feel a bit undone, the way she had a saying for everything, feed a cold, starve a fever. So I'm giving notice here to all you nagging fears. This is the plan. When the world starts feeling a bit undone, I will feed my faith and starve my fears. You can count on it right about now. I'm feeding my faith in the Maker of all people, feeding faith in hope and mercy and the Slayer of giants, feeding faith in redemption and making resurrection my refrain. I'm gorging on grace and feasting on the glory of God in the moment, the sky like this, and the air in the lungs like this, and heart thrumming alive in my ears like this. I'm grabbing all you fears by the jugular, because I know you are my everyday enemy. You fears are too often my cancer, my addiction, my hidden habit. You're my jailer, my poison, my daily blade of self-harm. You've been my anesthetic, the thing I've let come freeze me every day, lock me up and suck away my life. You've snuffed up my soul while you kept on breathing for years. You're the most common brain tumor, always beginning in our minds. You fears may think you can divide us and conquer us and imprison us in small places and small lives with high fences that keep out hope and possibility and each other and the lives we really want. But you don't know how we're seeing things. You may think you can make us cynical about dreams and apathetic about hope and dubious about possibility and people and prospects, but we're all over you. You aren't meant to drive our lives. You're meant to teach us something about life. You're a chameleon that wears 1,000 different masks, and there are ways to see the realest, truest, surest things. You can sound loud and look like anger, or you can strut about and rant like pride. You can grow deathly quiet and look like numbness or apathy or indifference or a dream running in the wrong direction. But the thing is, when I find my fears, I find my idols. When I find where you lurk, I will look you in the eye until I know your realest name, and I will say your name out loud. Every fear is a mask for an idol. Sit long enough in the quiet and let the fear get close enough. What seems like your worst nightmare. And then let your hand flash out like a fireball of fierce redemption. Rip that flimsy mask off and name the fear for what it is. Break your idols and you break free of all your fears. So I will go on crushing all of your life-absorbing fears to a fine powder because this is the deal. I want to be better at letting go of you than letting go of joy. I don't have to worry about what's up ahead because Christ is the head of everything. And I don't have to fear what's around the next corner because Christ is already there too. We don't have to abide in our fears because we can abide in our Father. There's believing it and there's abundantly living it. Fear is a liar and love hands out keys. Love is infinite and love can't ever end. And if love doesn't ever run out, what is there ever to fear? There will still be love when the worst happens and when the hope doesn't happen. There will still be love when everything's crumbling and there will be enough love to rebuild. there will still be enough love to keep breathing, to keep believing, to keep being and being brave. For this I know. Fear can be what we feel, but brave is what we do. And there's enough brave in me to believe that though the world is broken, there is light getting in. That though the busted road ahead may head through the dark, there is more than abundantly enough love round every bend that will carry more than I can imagine. That though there may be battles ahead to brave, as long as I keep holding on to love, there is never any losing. It's strange how that is. How hate is never the enemy, like fear actually is. And every fear shatters, breaks away, when it turns to face the relentless, abundant love that will not be stopped by anything. For reflection, what fears in your life might be idols that need to be broken? How are you abundantly feeding your faith and daily starving your fears? Devotion 16, Growing Abundance. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. 1 Corinthians 13, 9-10. It's been a late spring, cold and wet, as if the sun's been hiding, grieving a loud and polarized world. When the sky finally leaks itself dry, the farmer and one of his freckled girls head to the barren fields with their seeds in their willing hands. The farmer wears a sweatshirt he's had since before she was born. She wears a smile a mile wide. You can relax into an easy smile when you trust that your father holds your world. The girl's never broken the earth before, so he walks across the field to show her how to run the cultivator, how to make a seed bed in front of him with a planter, how to break up the soil. He shows her how to shift and run the hydraulic levers, when to lift, drop, and turn to coordinate the whole dance. She never takes her eyes off him, nodding, repeating, memorizing. A field has to be broken open before it can grow anything. And he says what he always says, just stay steady. No fits and starts, just stay steady. Trust it as it comes. I hear too, nod too. Steadiness is a balm to brokenness. I say what I always say, maybe for me the most. Don't be afraid. Don't even be afraid of being afraid. And she winks. Got it. Spring's warming on our shoulders. You can feel fear, but you don't have to be afraid of being afraid. When you aren't afraid of being afraid, you transform fear into friend. They break that ground like breaking open a piñata, and the breaking can make you believe in good things coming. Sure, she may be intimidated by the tractor, but the thing is, feelings can accompany you, but they don't get to control you. Feelings get to inform you, but they don't get to form you. Feelings get to keep you company, but they don't get to keep you in bondage. Only God keeps you. The girl breaks the field again and again. The field smells earthy, like loamy possibility. And brokenness never has to be the end. Brokenness can be the beginning of growth. The only way for anything to grow is for something to break. Growth only happens when the status quo is broken. Change can only happen when what is broken. Don't be afraid of broken things. This is the beginning of changing things, of growing things. Our girl pulls down the field, breaking open the earth so that seeds can break in the darkest places and then resurrect to abundant life. And I sit on the edge of the field and watch. There's that cross drawn this morning on my wrist. What looks more broken than the cross? But what wins more than the cross? The cross doesn't look like it's winning, more like it's losing, pouring out, being given to those who don't love it all. It conquers everything, but it looks more broken than anything. Jesus' cross proves it. Love may not seem self-fulfilling, but in actual fact,